This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey everyone, what you're about to listen to is Gary and some fellow speakers having a conversation about NFT utility right after the Brand Minds event in Bucharest, Romania. For anyone that's still skeptical about NFTs or still having a tough time understanding the point of NFTs, I think this podcast is really going to help you. Enjoy.
Let's take just an ordinary family.
Yes.
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
I love this. Right? I love the question
upper
already.
Upper middle class.
Keep going.
Middle class, upper middle class.
Yes.
How are they going to own and use NFT?
Their favorite coffee shop that sells them $7 latte.
Right.
The punch card that gives them an 11th free coffee will be an NFT in a decade.
Okay.
And let me keep playing.
So it's a way.
Let me keep playing.
Okay. Oh, hold on. Let me ask a follow up. So it's a way to,
prove ownership and put utility against it.
Okay, but what it's doing is it's actually making more efficient something that people are already doing.
Correct, but let me keep going.
Okay, go.
Now, the coffee shop owner in Milwaukee is quite progressive and decided that the artist of the coffee punch card is going to be a inner city child from the bad parts of Milwaukee who's a great, who they just did a contest and they won, and the month of February for Black History Month is this artist, this 16-year-old. 9 years later, goes on to be a commercially successful artist.
Right.
The first art that he has ever made on the blockchain happens to be a Milwaukee coffee shop.
Okay.
Collectors like me that collect this and millions of other things go and start buying that NFT for $2,000 because it's his rookie NFT.
Right.
Rendering an 8% commission fee to the Milwaukee coffee shop that's sharing it with Tyrone, and four, and rendering me to wake up one day reading a headline and say, wait a minute, I have that NFT because I used to go to, it's creating infrastructure that people can't see yet. That's a beautiful example of the mundane SMB normal person. Every airline ticket is right now a QR code.
Right.
All three of us grew up when that was a piece of paper.
Right.
In between it was a email and many other things.
Right.
That also will be, every corporation has so agendas for art that they can, you know, if you look at, so well, that's where I think it's going.
What's interesting is at least to me, it's like not making more efficient something that already exists, but this idea that you can, the idea that you can do something that isn't possible today.
Correct. It's going to be both. It's going to be both.
And so what isn't possible today is this idea that you can have essentially, I mean, you think about with art, like you can have essentially the providence of the art built into the art itself. So
correct.
You know exactly where it is. And the other thing is that you can actually give the artist, him or herself, a cut of the secondary market.
It's absurd. That's it changes everything.
Because I think California has a law requiring that. So if I buy a piece of, if I buy a painting from Angela, all right, and then Angela becomes famous. I buy a painting from Angela when she's unknown.
Correct.
And it's $1,000.
Happens all the time.
And then Angela becomes incredibly famous.
Correct.
Then I sell that painting for $100,000. She doesn't get anything.
That's right.
Although under California law, there's some kind of provision that requires.
I'd love to know how well that's being enforced.
Exactly.
Correct.
That's the problem.
That's
NFTs,
correct.
Isn't that right?
That's exactly right. You know what else is amazing?
That is true.
Think about how people are going to fund their music projects. Think about how an artist, music artist today does it. They sign a contract with a record label for distribution.
Right.
They're basically getting a 20% cut after they pay back the bank all their dollars. For the most successful, it becomes an atrocious deal, which is why you've seen from Prince on through the decades of set. Now, let me play it a different way. Imagine Nirvana in 1992 had social media and on TikTok says our first album's coming out. And all the fans that have been following us on TikTok, you can buy an NFT that represents a percentage of the back end in perpetuity. Now, isn't that profound?
That's interesting.
Now, I'm getting goosebumps. Now, you know this. Fans hate when their band or artist gets famous because they sold out and they can't go see them when there's only 50 people in it. Now, fans are going to make their wealth from their favorite brands making
that's
it.
That's interesting.
Isn't that fascinating?
That's interesting.
Oh, and you know what?
You could do the same. You
could do it for everything.
One could do this. Could one do the same thing for actors?
Of course.
So you're basically just.
What about people?
Athletes.
What about people? What about Harry Potter? Or I'll give you a great one. I argue that if NFT was mature in 1975, that George Lucas would be the richest person on earth. Because every single collectible in digital form giving George Lucas a percentage of not only the primary, but the secondary trade. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, look at eBay right now and see how many tickets from concerts and sporting events are sold a year, stubs. Every ticket's gonna be an NFT within a half a decade.
Yeah.
Rendering the NBA, Alicia Keys, and many others getting in perpetuity royalties for collectors that now eBay and FedEx make money on, not them.
Interesting.
It is a profound technology that people are just starting to have the conversations in rooms like this that we're having, which I've only felt in my short career in 96-7 about the internet and 2005-6-7 about social media.
But you're bullish about, not about digital currency, but about digital assets.
That have utility attached. I'm not bullish on currency, I'm just not educated enough and haven't seen the path.
Right.
And I think government has to accept too much and private business has to accept too much. And there's a lot more friction. Whereas with NFTs, entrepreneurs and creatives and operators and audiences can now act today, which has a lot less friction than a government accepting Bitcoin as a fiat.
How much friction is there? Like what the form of ownership for civilians? Go back to this family
yep.
in Milwaukee.
Yes.
The form of ownership is a wallet.
Yes.
Is that right?
Tremendous friction. The reason this hasn't become hundreds of millions yet yeah. is the onboarding. No different than our parents putting a credit card into a computer in 1996 and being scared that it would be stolen, if you remember those days.
Yeah. Or my mother in 2022.
Fair.
Yeah.
Or us even figuring, I mean, I was a curious kid and just didn't understand Prodigy. I didn't know how to get on the internet. And then
right.
Mark Andreessen created Netscape Navigator
right.
and typing in an address and
right.
enter. So we are still, to your point, and I love the question, it is even for me, 2 years ago when I'm like, I'm going in, it was like, this is not so easy. What's a seed phrase and being a custodial owner of your state? It was a lot of friction.
Right.
Over the next decade, that will become the mundane and that's when it will explode.
I think the analogy is really interesting that I hadn't thought about before. Is there a mosaic
yeah,
Netscape
there is,
Navigator
of course.
Or NFT?
Of course. I believe what I talked about today on stage was this concept
yeah.
of Web 2.5. Everyone's talking 2 and 3. I think there's a chapter here in the next 3 to 5 years. And I've actually been bullish Coinbase, even though they got lots of problems given how overvalued the stock was and where they're at right now. I believe in their CEO, and I actually think they're the most positioned to create what I call a Web 2.5, where they are the holder of the assets. So it is actually against the philosophy of Web 3. The philosophy of Web 3 is do not allow corporations or others to have control. The problem is everybody loves the Wild Wild West, which that is, until you're the one getting shot. So I've watched people on Twitter go crazy and be Web3 maxis and be like, this is the best, fuck the government, fuck the corporations, and then they get their NFT stolen, and immediately they're like, hey government, hey corporation, and so, right?
Yeah.
And so we're gonna go through this path, but I think your intuition on that insight is right. I do think that the next decade is about education and innovators, whether on the corporate side or the entrepreneurial side, of eliminating friction for the day-to-day. But much like in 1995, where I was a kid and really wasn't a technology kid, what I knew is that people were gonna use this damn thing because it was just gonna change everything.
Yeah.
That's kind of in the same.
It's interesting. My first email account was a CompuServe account.
Mm, so you were there.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah,
this.
Of course I do.
This my first email.
Was that 92.34?
It was like 94.
Yeah, makes sense.
My first email address was something like 7462985.
Phone number.
Oh, it wasn't even that.
Oh, just some numbers? Yeah. Number
at CompuServe.com.
I think mine was gnuts@AOL.com.
AOL did that kind of onboarding that made it easier for
me and a lot of my friends who are like, I would call us purple. We're not red, we're using political standards.
Yeah.
We're not red or blue on this thing in Web3. We're purple. We're in the middle.
Yeah.
We're very bullish.
Yeah.
But we're not like, the metaverse is here tomorrow. It's all about timing,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
When we have thoughtful combos where we're being thoughtful, we always talk about what's the AOL moment. Which organization, which entrepreneur is gonna come along and create an onboarding.
That makes a lot more sense.
But what will happen in that very quickly, just to give you the big but, is a lot of people will realize, wait a minute, this isn't actually Web3, this isn't blockchain, because the hypothesis is decentralization creates no power for anyone. Yeah. What we're talking about right now is Web 2.5, something that somebody is still in power of.
Yeah.
And what you know what I like about it? I like a world of a mature Web 2.5 and a real Web 3, because then you're giving people options. Hey, do you want to live in Web 3 where, hey, by the way, yeah. it's all on you.
Yeah.
You better know your shit. You better know how it works. And you have the option. Hey, you're a little worried about that. You're a little tech nervous. You're not there yet. Use this Web 2.5. And that's what I think the next decade's about.
But for mass adoption, civilians are going to be indifferent whether it's Web 2.5 or Web 3.0.
They're going to be Web 2.5 because Web 3 is going to be too complicated.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they want.
But look at social media. When I was all gung-ho in 05, 06, it took a while. We have now full adoption in 2022. Most people have some account. Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, something. And I think that is inevitable for Web 3, but it will be a decade and a half, a decade, and two decades. But starting a year ago to that time, every day things are getting innovated and changing, and the opportunity is extraordinary. The opportunity in Web 2 from 2005 to 2020 was extraordinary. Facebook, Instagram, Uber, Seamless. I mean, just everything we know.
Yeah.
Spotify, I mean, name something.
Yeah,
I'll tell you something that happened in 15 years.
Yeah.
The same thing's about to happen.
Yeah.
And
the accelerant there was that phone.
Correct. This is now in place though for Web 3.
Right. Well, that could be.
Back to the coffee shop, right?
Well,
to your point.
I keep coming, I mean, it's
the accelerator to the moon of this.
This is actually the most I think I've understood about this topic in the last 6 months. Because to me, like, the takeaway is actually thinking analogically about this and saying, what is the Netscape Navigator? What is the AOL? What is the thing that's going to move it from? I mean, I remember, like, I'm old enough to remember Prodigy.
Yeah.
I'm old enough.
I'm 46. How old are you?
I'm 10 years older than you.
First of all, you look phenomenal. Second of all, you and I would still argue that we're in that same sphere.
Yeah.
That generation, in my opinion, and this is what I have a lot of frustration.
I remember in 93 going on this thing called the internet, and it was just, it was like on an MS-DOS computer.
Yeah.
And like looking around and saying, "Whoa, this is kind of
It was profound.
Who are these people out there?
It was profound.
But that is
what's
that,
happening now.
Yeah.
And to that point,
you have to be extremely.
But to that point,
it's a small sliver of people.
Correct. But here's where I get really passionate. So many of my contemporaries, 45 to 55, who are thoughtful enough to have this exact combo,
yeah.
I argue with them and motivate them and encourage them. I'm like, you know better. You actually lived this movie already. You remember 1990 to 2000.
Exactly.
You should actually have more
exactly.
veracity to be curious, but a lot of people are complacent. It's a lot of work.
Listen,
I spent 100 hours, which is meaningful time, just watching the same 101s to get to these hypotheses. I love being a communicator and a translator. When you just said what you said, that means the world to me. You don't understand. That is such an invigorating comment.
What's the best thing to watch or read on this, short of having a conversation with you?
Send me an email. Let's get each other's information.
But yeah, because
I'll send you a bunch of links.
Yeah, all right. In the old days, it was possible to, boxers would create, professional boxers would create what's called a syndicate. And the syndicate was essentially that they would get investors in their career. And the investors in their career would essentially finance the training.
That's right.
In exchange for
a piece of the purse
of the future.
Mike Tyson.
Well, and I always thought,
not only the 20s up to Mike Tyson.
And I've been waiting for 20 years for that.
That's the technology that exists.
Why would? But I'm wondering whether
Let me jump in.
Yeah.
There is a gentleman. I want to give you his name. Jesus, I'm blanking. Ah, God, I know him so well. He worked at Facebook forever. He'll come to me in a second. Shit, I could see his face. He sent me a startup that is built on the blockchain that allows human beings to come in and sell a piece of their life earnings, and the technology infrastructure is absurd.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But I mean.
Amazing, right?
And you know why?
Because they're getting the upfront economics.
Yeah.
I think I'm talented. And if you think about it, this is why I'm very passionate about the blockchain. Let me give you a great analogy on this one. Let's say you're a kid from the other side of the tracks, right? And you don't have a network, but you have all the black and white talent. If you think about that trade, I'm that person. If I can get $200,000 up front, I may not have to slug away a decade. If I give up 10% of my earnings, if I'm that talent, for $200,000 today, think about on both sides. For the kid, that's a good trade. Quality of your life, maybe ability to go do what they really want to do instead of giving up a decade to get to the leverage. On the other side, someone like me, if I see the 10, and especially me, because I was a kid from the other side, that's my most interesting thing. That's an incredible financial investment. These are profound changes. And when the government is on the blockchain, and think about where you're going with the California thing, when that kid really goes on to be that kid, I'm getting a piece of his income tax statement. Sure, he could play a little bit here and there, but that's gonna be attached to that contract. You're actually, as the investor, gonna get your money.
Yeah.
It's really big technology. That's a really fun one, right? And you know what that does? That changes society.
Well, yeah.
Now all of a sudden, you know, what a decentralized server base creates is some of the promises that a lot of us have wanted for the world. It gives us another tool to make social change, and that's exciting.
Yeah, well,
and like the internet, they'll be good and bad.
What you're describing is essentially a syndicate for everybody.
Correct.
Everybody can.
And everything.
Well, but the other thing about that is that it opens up an interesting ecosystem, because...
Well, what it really does is it puts pressure on governments,
the syndicate for human beings.
The syndicate for human beings creates a peer-to-peer infrastructure that starts to really question a lot of things that sit in the middle.
Like?
Governments. I'll give you a great example. I can't today, and it's early, see a world where people don't buy each other's homes off of each other through the blockchain and nothing's in the middle of it.
Nothing meaning like the friction creators like mortgage insurance and closed title.
Yes, sir.
I mean, title would be a perfect example.
Titles, title, ridiculous. Ready?
Title companies are
ridiculous. What I
title,
felt, ready?
Title insurance.
Ready? You ready? You ready? Yeah. You ready? What I felt about bookstores in 1995, because I was really in it. I was really in it at that point. I was like, they're in deep shit. I even like had one friend's family in it. I'm like, I'm telling you, this Amazon thing is bad. Is exactly about to happen to title insurance in the next 20 years.
Yeah, I would say that could even be faster.
What the internet did for information, the blockchain will do for transaction.
Yeah. I mean,
it's really worth both of your, and it's really worth your time to go deep.
In America.
It's a good,
closing costs, especially with, absurd.
It's absurd.
It's absurd.
It's absurd.
It's always been absurd.
It's
I think
absurd.
The only reason it hasn't changed is that people don't do it
options.
Regularly. They don't do it, well, they're
options.
They also don't do it regularly.
So options.
They're, sitting there saying, signing all these forms and paying thousands of dollars for nothing.
There's a lot
and
of.
And then it's like, okay, whatever, that's done. I'm not going to have to do it again.
What about being a merchant, giving up 4% of your money to Amex for somebody to buy something from you?
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Yeah.
My dad didn't take credit cards. I got into my dad's liquor store in 1991. 1991, I'm 15. We don't take credit cards. I'm like, Dad. And I was at the register. I'm like, Dad, do you know how many people leave the store and don't have a check or cash?
Yeah.
And it was like 6 or 7, but when you're a small business, every day 6 or 7?
Yeah.
Like, Dad, we have to take credit cards. But he couldn't get over an emotional hump of 3-4%. It was meaningful money. Now it's just accepted. But what do you think is gonna happen with blockchain? You're gonna take Solana, Ethereum's got expensive gas fees, but over time there'll be other blockchains. I mean, credit card companies have a lot to think about. There's a lot of people sitting in the middle. And this is why this is so fun. I didn't know how many more, when Web2 came, I was like, ooh, this is internet. But I wasn't sure like what, you know, you don't know when the next thing's coming. This is so big, and what's funny, because of the greed of Bitcoin and NFTs, what it's doing is it's a smoke signal over here and it's keeping people's attention away from the actual underlining. And so to me, I'm like, ooh, as an entrepreneur and as somebody who's got passion to like take advantage, good, bad, selfish, selfless, I'm like, ooh, I have a lot of time because this thing over here is distracting a lot of smart people, which is gonna render a couple more years of opportunity to land grab. That's what's happening.
Yeah. And if you look back, looking at the history, I mean, I just remember like the early days of e-commerce, the short-term predictions were way too rosy, but the long-term predictions were not rosy enough.
Correct, Pets.com. Pets.com was 80 billion, it didn't have any revenue. March, April, every day since I've been talking about this space, I've been referencing March 2000. What exactly you just said.
But,
But Amazon was $4 a share.
Let me introduce you to Chewy. Chewy is basically Pets.com.
He knows. He follows me around.
Yeah.
I use Pets.com and Chewy every day of the week. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen, by the way, with NFT projects right now. In this carnage of 99% that were made in the last 4 years going to zero, there is absolutely 2% Andy Warhol, Jackson Pollock, Disney. It's just going to take a little time to figure out which are. Today, somebody will buy an NFT for $4,000 that was $40,000 7 months ago, and it will be $4 million in 20 years.
Yeah.
It happened today.
Yeah.
So that's on that little part of the world. But that is...
What about, if you think about it from the... So again, let's say that you're an investor in NFTs.
Yes.
Or you're an investor in...
infrastructure around NFTs.
In the syndicated earnings for everybody.
Yes.
So it seems to me that the market then demands talent scouts, talent spotters of some kind. Talent spotters for emerging artists.
It was my biggest hypothesis of influencer marketing.
Of what?
Influencer marketing.
Okay.
The reason I believe in the NFT thing so much is over the last 10 years, I've been very close to what has happened with human beings monetizing themselves. For every Logan Paul and Charlie D'Amelio and people that have gotten famous and made tens of millions of dollars, there is a long tail of many people who've made $50,000 to $200,000 talking about themselves or their passions instead of having a job. The same thing will happen in NFT land that are looking for talent. There will be the people that go on to make profound economics, but the long tail of having alternatives. I'm so happy for artists. There's a lot of people who could never make a living painting, who are gonna convert into painting on digital, who will make $83,000 a year instead of being a government worker or an executive at a retail store, will be an artist full time, live within their means. It's not about billions. And it's gonna enable a lot of that. It really is, which is really neat. You know, like if you think about somebody who's naturally an artist, born an artist, the 70s, 80s, 90s were not kind to them. They had to get a real job. You think about a kid born today, let this thing mature out for the next 20 years, she or he is gonna be able to have a livelihood around their art. Now, it's gonna be hard. Even being a person that makes $80,000 a year selling NFTs will be competitive because everyone's gonna try to sell. But if you look at influencer marketing, there are millions making $100,000 a year.
So many of these markets are winner-take-all markets. Like the long tail is,
on the platform side.
What do you mean?
Winner take all, Google, Facebook, TikTok.
No, I'm talking about on the individual side.
No, on the individual side, the long tail of creators on YouTube and TikTok is extremely long. It's winner take all if you define success $1 million. If you define success $80,000.
I'd love to see like what the, because you can have.
It's astonishing.
Yeah.
It's astonishing.
There's some thickness down here.
It's astonishing what's happening. It's not being reported. People are not collecting the data. You have to be in the day-to-day to understand how many kids, 15 to 45, I use the word kids that way, are making $50,000 to $100,000 a year being a personal brand. It's very long tail. And as technology, and by the way, the Great Recession has a lot more to do with that options. And I keep telling a lot of my corporate friends and leaders, I'm like, you're worried about the Great Resignation? Wait till you see the Great never applying in the first place. You've got an entire generation of kids growing up on Roblox, TikTok, Fortnite, who are like, I could work at IBM or VaynerMedia or whatever, or I can make 61K doing X, Y, and Z. I'll live with three roommates. I'll keep building. Maybe I get to 200K. And it is a blind spot to the establishment at scale. And so what we talk about is these kids are entitled. They're not entitled. They're aware of their options.
Hey everyone, Jacob from Team Gary here. The audio gets a little cut off, so we wanted to remind you what Daniel Pink is saying here. He's saying that if you wanted to start a business that finds the most promising young people out there, and you wanted to buy a small piece of their earnings early in their career, what discovery method out there is the most efficient at finding talent?
Something came along in the last 2 years that did a lot of work for you.
What's that?
The TikTok algorithm. So today, I'll explain.
Yeah.
Let me break it down for you. 5 years ago, the answer to your question is great research.
Yes.
If you're asking Spotify and Facebook to do it, they should be keeping the economics. I've always said this to everybody. Everyone's like, fuck Facebook. I'm like, they're doing it for you.
Right, okay.
If you want all the economics, do it yourself.
Okay.
So that's one. My contemporary answer based on today is called the TikTok algorithm. TikTok, why TikTok has become the biggest social network in the world is because the algorithm was based on the interest graph, not on the social graph. What does that mean? It means as a human being, I the four of us with Dustin might have went to high school together, and we were a clique. And at 17, we were a clique. We were in a small town together, we were a crew, and we followed each other. Over the next decade, all four of us' lives evolved. Our interests evolved, and getting content, and by the way, at 27, all four of us are likely in different parts of our life cycle. One of us might be married, one might have a kid, one might really still try to figure themselves out after adversity, one might be flourishing as an independent. But the content becomes not as valuable because when you're following people, people are always evolving. That was Facebook, that was Twitter, that was the first era of social. The graph that it was built on was who you follow.
Okay, right, okay.
TikTok came along and said, we're gonna go about this differently. We're gonna feed you the things that you're interested in. We're gonna build AI and technology that knows Gary's into wine now, but he might be less into wine in 2 years, and we're gonna show him sneakers. And it keeps pounding interest. What that has done is created a higher level of merit and more stickiness. People enjoy TikTok so much today because they're actually getting what they want.
But why wouldn't Facebook and Twitter do that too?
Oh, they're going, They're going to, but yeah. But algorithms are high tech.
Okay,
there's
sure,
a lot
yeah,
that goes
right,
into
yeah,
that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So nonetheless, to answer
that,
yes, they have. Because
new thing that they
no, well, TikTok itself is young in comparison to the other social networks. Final point to go back to your question, because it's now based on merit. So what you'll see, I don't know if you've done this or you've seen this or how close you are to this. Why is TikTok different? If you go to a personal brand like me or a brand like Nike, if you go to all their social networks, if you look at their analytics, most of their content gets about the same amount of views because it lives in this pocket. If you go to TikTok right now, if you get curious on this conversation and do a couple hours of research and you start clicking around on brands and people and look at their TikToks, you'll see something amazing. This video got 1 million views. The next one got 900. The next one got 3,000. The next one got 58,000. And so what ends up happening is you have a higher level of merit of the content being the variable. And then if you ladder that up to the individual, it's creating a very substantial insight to who does the world like right now. Thus rendering the answer to your 17-year-old question. I know this because it's what I do for a living. And a lot of the relationships I make are based on humans that are ascending on their way up. And I'm trying to find ways to bring them value because I've lived that life. And it's good to have relationships with people that are the future leaders of the world in different categories. So that's the answer to your question, my friend. If you started a fund called 17 and did that today, I would tell you that you would have very heavy math quant analysts on your team living in TikTok. And then you would need socialized people, almost like club promoters, who were charismatic enough to get the kids to come into your office, because it takes both, the quant and the qual, and then that becomes your firm.
You could even, if you pull on this tree a little bit more, you end up with, you know, let's say that I buy the rights 1% of, I invest in Angela at age 17.
That would have been smart.
And I pay her X for
that percentage.
1%.
Yep.
Just make it easy.
Because she wants to live in a nice apartment instead of slumming it with four of her roommates.
Right, right, right. Or she has a brilliant idea.
Or she knows, or what I'm trading on every day, she knows who you are and she wants to make that trade because she also wants mentorship.
Yeah,
see, that's an interesting variable.
Let's,
but keep going. Yeah, keep going.
Economics.
Okay. Yep.
If her star starts to rise, 1% of her lifetime earnings I could actually trade that.
Yes, you can.
I could trade.
You got it.
I could hold that for 3 years.
Now.
I'm gonna
you know what he just did?
I'm gonna sell this 1% stake now for.
I'm very happy right now.
For $1 million.
Can I tell you why I'm happy?
I think that she's gonna make $100 million.
You know why I'm happy? You're gonna like this. Let me tell you why. What you just did in your brain was transition from Web 2 to Web 3. Let me explain. You know what he did? As a normal VC, the way we know it in investing, you kind of sit on that paper in perpetuity. When it goes to the blockchain,
right,
it becomes a transactional asset.
Yeah.
So he can keep that forever.
Yeah.
But if he wanted to do the bigger version of what you did with him, because he's at this point
this
in his life,
to me is a big fucking thing.
It's a big fucking thing.
I think that's a big thing because.
Do you see this? That's my goosebumps.
Uh-huh.
That's how big of a deal it is. You got it. This.
But that's interesting now because you go back to your VC example. if you there are markets where you can sell.
You got it.
But they're very kludgy.
Correct.
They're very kludgy.
Whereas this is going to be frictionless at scale.
Yeah.
This conversation for the last 45 minutes is why Zoom will never eat up my whole life. Going to physical places and meeting contemporaries.
I agree with you.
It's gonna be both. I'll always, the cat's out of bag, I'm so excited about doing certain things that way. But this, us having this moment together, sharing ideas, thinking, my whole career, by the way, all the great insights of my life that have led me down great paths is being on the receiving end of this conversation. In this moment, I'm kind of feeding. But
you know, it's interesting.
Hey everyone, Jacob back from Team Gary here. We just wanted to explain to you what Angela is saying since the audio gets cut out again. She's saying that she's been a part of many conversations around NFTs over the past few weeks, but many of them have been about the large implications that NFTs and the blockchain will have in our society. For example, climate change, the metaverse, etc. But for some reason, she believes this conversation is the most nuanced and humane conversation she's had about NFTs yet, and she's been grasping it because she finally understands NFTs on a human level. What NFTs mean to her as a human being.
One thing that I found, because I'm incredibly who I am, and so the climate aspect matters to me tremendously. What I found with 99% of my conversations is people are headline reading and don't know the tech. They don't know that Ethereum is going to proof of stake versus proof of work, and under that rendering in August, it's deploying less energy than Netflix. So now I ask my friends who get on their high horse, stop watching Netflix. You know, people are very good at being selective on.
Yeah, but that's why this is such a poll in my
correct.
Experience. This is such a polarized 100%. That I made incredibly sideways.
You know what's really, amazing? You would be flabbergasted how polarizing the internet and social media 1995 and 2005 conversations were.
Really?
What do you mean?
So that's not something that I remember.
People had very strong opinions in 1996, 7, 8, why the internet was not only a fad but bad for the world.
Oh yeah. Oh come on. I remember, again.
Right, because you were in a different place. You were too young for that.
Yeah. Come on. Okay, here you go. So here's where I'm gonna play my seniority card.
Yeah.
Here. All right.
It's a valuable. I call it wisdom.
All right. I remember a time when people said, "It's unbelievable when you think about it." I haven't thought about this for years. This is maybe 96, 97. Well, the internet might be a thing, but women won't use it.
Oh, that's right. That's right, brother.
The idea about the like women won't use
it. Yeah, it's so absurd.
Like, this is like a guy.
Just a bunch of dudes being stupid.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That's like 96, 97.
Or less cliche dude talk, no one's gonna use it. You wanna go have fun? Go Google the internet is a fad and read the articles.
Hey everyone, do you remember at the beginning of this podcast, Gary talks about how NFTs and the blockchain can be utilized at coffee shops? Well, this is 20 minutes after he said that, right after this conversation is done. He gets up, takes about 4 steps, and this is what happened next.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Nice to see you again.
Great to see you again.
2017.
Yes, it's great to see you.
And we spoke about my company at that time, and very inspirational today.
Thank
my
you.
Husband is here. We're starting an NFT project in Romania, and
good luck.
We own a coffee shop that sells, accepts cryptocurrency.
Isn't that crazy? Well, anyways, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Gary V Audio Experience. We hope to see you next time. Make sure you tweet him @GaryV to let him know your thoughts. Thanks.